Money FM 89.3, best of weekends.
N. Sivasotti, who is also known as Otter Man. We've had him on the show before. He is the expert in Singapore on otters, but he's the senior lecturer in the Department of Biological Sciences at NUS here and the coordinator for Tidy Cats and International Coastal Cleanup. He's always out and about. In fact, Siva, I'm surprised you're not out today, you know, with up to your ankles in muck cleaning up part of the beach or something.
We have a youth symposium, okay, which I'll hop on to in a while. Yeah.
So you're busy. You're not just sitting back and taking a break today. You are actually working again. I suspected that. How are you today?
I'm good. Okay. Glad to see you guys. Really love the Yoda voice, Neil.
Thank you. Flattered I am. Now, I'm going to do it all day now. Let's set the scene. Let's set the scene for our wonderful listeners. And I want to get your thoughts on this and how your ego was suitably massaged, shall we say. So we've got the Deputy Prime Minister, Heng Swee Keat. He's making his budget speech and he's talking about this multi-pronged Singapore Green Plan for 2030. And during the speech in Parliament, he mentions you. The idea that more individuals such as Mr. Sivasotti should come forward through acts of volunteerism, through various eco groups, and partner with the government. Mm. First, what were your thoughts about hearing yourself named? And second, what do you think about his comments generally?
Well, to tell you the truth, I didn't realize he mentioned me. I was listening to the the speech, but I was trying to pick on, okay, so what does this mean for sustainability? Because if you read scientific literature, right, way back in the 90s, you hear exactly the same cautions being pronounced by scientists. I mean, I was an undergraduate in the late 80s, and I could see habitats were disappearing. Our oceans were being polluted and overfished, and all of this was giving rise to a lot of impact, and we needed to change behavior within urban centers. In the meantime, you know, in the past 30 years, half of global population have shifted to cities. So this actually represents a very interesting strategy. If you can mitigate what we do in our urban centers, there's very big impact on ameliorating impact. You know, it's a opportunity. So for example, well, you know, McDonald's shortens a plastic spoon. The amount of plastic that is not entering our system to be dealt with is phenomenal. And the people who initiated that, you know, it's the public asking for things like this because they're thinking about the issues. So in Singapore, what was going to be different? We know that the government is serious about it. They have an inter-ministry panel. Our Singapore government respects science. They promote it. In fact, they insist on it. And then prior to the budget, what was exciting about the announcement of Singapore Green Plan was the fact that, you know, you had five ministries speak up about it. So this was no longer Ministry of Environment, maybe struggling in the background while there are a lot of competing interests that lead to compromises and all that. Now five ministries come forward. People have said that, hey, look, you know, it's not really good enough, and I agree, and we need to change, right, and improve targets. But the plan is what they call, it's dynamic, so it can grow and it can improve. But I thought what was quite significant was five ministries coming forward to say, hey, this is going to be central to what we do. So it's no longer just about, oh, reduction of plastic. It's about, hey, where are we investing? You know, where are banks investing? Are they actually supporting activities which are very which are degrading the environment? It's easy to not know what's happening when you're living in a city. But wow, our reach is so far. And so five ministries, I really hope that it's going to be very different this time.
It's a very positive move, as you've just mentioned. But we still do have this tension between development and growth and our natural environment. We've seen this over the past few weeks with the Dover Forest discussion and controversy, if you will, and what to do with the rail corridor and all these different things. Now, the government's come out and talked about the carbon tax going up. They've talked about increasing reliability on electric vehicles, raising the petrol tax.
More
public transport. So there are a lot of great things happening, but there is this dichotomy, is there not, in Singapore between clear-cutting, you know, up in Neil's area where he lives in the north part of the island, and wanting, on the other hand, saying we need to be a green society. Where do we find that balance, and how is that going to be found?
So that's a really big struggle. I mean, if you want to talk about whether our targets are adequate, whether the carbon tax is sufficient and all that, talk to Winston Chow. You know, he uses football analogies, which you guys will love, to talk about this struggle. But when you talk about the struggle has always been there from day one. What people may not realize, like, is that most of our forests were cleared by end of 19th century. So correct. The guys that were sent to assess the thing, they were quite appalled and horrified because plantations, cultivation had just denuded the landscape. When I was an undergrad, I was learning about firebreaks, certain trees that you plant to prevent firebreaks. I was like, what's that about? Because it was a lalang landscape. So when it catches fire, it just spreads from one patch to another. Sure. So the landscape was denuded. Then it recovered due to a forested plant. But then when it recovers and government looks at the landscape and they say, okay, we need a certain amount of space for residential, for housing, for manufacturing and the like. So this happens every 10 years. There's a big dialogue discussion triggered by a certain area. There was Chek Jawa in the 2000s, you know, in the 1990s, there was a Lower Pierce. Do we build a golf course or not? And then more recently, the Dover Forest. What's different about it now is we're not fighting the battles at the edge of the nature reserve, although we still have problems there, but these battles are being fought further out. Mm-hmm. And the public interest in nature, the test is going to be how much you're willing to give up.
Yeah.
So, you know, I live in a 3-room flat. I don't own a car. I also know that I can't expect this of all my friends or all the guys I grew up with have a completely different lifestyle. So the reality between what we want, what we're going to pay for it, I stay in Holland Village, right? So these were formerly settlements. Then they absorbed the settlements into HDB. They stuffed the cemeteries into, you can see it at Holland Close Commonwealth. That's where the Hakka Cemetery is. So all of that got compacted. And I'm sitting on an area that was denuded of forest, so I'm guilty of the same sin. But what we have seen is, okay, how do we bring nature back, given that urbanization was so extreme and in a hurry in the 60s and 70s? So now I know I hear when I wake up in the morning, there are kingfishers calling. I think they're just nuts. There's so much light pollution, they're calling throughout the night. Then, of course, there's the koels, but there's also jungle fowl, and then there are hornbills. So we have made certain strides which are really gratifying. So we're not in as bad shape as we should be, but the scrutiny is very important and we welcome it. I mean, I never could believe that the public would be so engaged to the point ask MPs to ask questions in parliament. In the nature conservation scene in the past 30 years, we've had to be very, you know, we have to be very patient because the public may not be with us. So actually, it's government that's taken lead in conservation when the public was not interested.
Well, let me jump in there, Siva Solti. I mean, you're right. For the first time that I can remember, we actually have keen environmentalists within the government. Lewis Ung leaps to mind. Of course, Desmond Lee is very pro-environment, trying to manage that balance. We're going to get him on the show in a couple of weeks to talk about that. But the thing that stuck out for me was the Deputy Prime Minister Heng saying that he wants more Singaporeans to work with the government, and it's not so much being us and them anymore. And a very interesting point that you made, this idea that we take ownership, we the people take ownership of our green spaces. Previously, tree planting was always them. It was the government.
Yep.
They planted trees for us, for our green spaces. Now it seems to be a shift, am I right to say that it should be us planting trees? It should be us taking a degree of ownership of our green spaces. What are your thoughts on that?
So the 1 million tree movement arose out of a reforestation process. When we looked at our nature reserves, you must realize they were formerly cultivated areas. And then these buffer parks that are added on the edge, they are very poor quality forests. And just declaring them parks is just the beginning of a lot of work. What follows is habitat enhancement, which is really tough. So that plan came up. And then after that, they said, what the heck, let's plant 1 million trees and get the community involved. But when I go for tree planting, I'll see something like 8 MPark staff supporting 15 members of public. And it's, I tell you, it's well, it's better than business class. It's first class.
It's so
right?
true. It's so we did it yeah. together, didn't we? It's so true.
Yes. Yeah.
It's like one for so one staff support.
Around, make sure you're not going to strain yourself. That you know how to use the chunko. That your depth has reached proper thing. That you don't do anything to damage the plant.
So
there's all this hovering. And then you ask them, what plant is this? Why are we planting? They say, oh, okay, this one will grow up to 40 meters. Deeper in, that one grows up to 20 meters. So we're trying to mimic a fair. It's phenomenal. It's like you don't even get this kind of attention in university.
It's so true.
Wow, it's an apprenticeship. However, this is not sustainable, right? Because the poor blighters who are supporting you, they have to do social distancing work, being very polite to the public, just like they are in the museums, except you have public who say, I'm exercising, I don't have to wear masks, but you're barely walking.
Yeah. Don't get me started on that. I see this all the time. people are literally walking backwards. They're going so slow.
Yeah, I just wanted to jump in there, Siva, and say, I think we agree on this. You've mentioned it publicly. I just feel that the public, yes, the volunteerism is great. The tree planting is magnificent. But I still feel that the average Singaporean needs to get their hands literally dirtier to get a feel of the soil. I mean, I've done the tree planting thing more than once and I've loved it, but it is first-class treatment. You know, some poor South Asian worker has pre-dug the hole for me.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a bit...
Very Singaporean.
And it's a bit patronizing.
Okay, okay.
I did grow up in the UK. I have planted plants before. Yes. You know.
I know you have a lot of guilt, Neil, at all these events.
I've got a lot of guilt.
Yeah, but you got to realize that the public just had parks that sprung up for their use. And so they are in a transition phase. All of us are in a transition phase. The MPARK staff is learning how to speak with the public to gently advise them on how they can do this best. Then the public is beginning to reacquaint themselves with the chunko, the older ones at least. The younger ones have to learn. So when I went for all of these, I said, look, I'm a veteran nature guy, right? Surely I can't be doing this. So what I did is I told MPARKS, look, let me partner you. Let me get my, you know, NUS Toddycats and we'll have a team system and all that. And they were so nervous. They were nervous that we'll breach safe distancing. They're nervous that we'll cut ourselves with a chunko. But our safety procedures, you know, we've done 20 years of mangrove cleanups are actually excellent. They're far better than anything anyone has seen. Time. So we started in October and eventually they realized, okay, this is actually safe, this could work. So then I demonstrated to them, look at the ratio. Now it's one MPARK staff to 25 people. And we didn't just plant the tree, we dug the hole. So we did the soil preparation on two separate occasions. Then we came back on the third to do tree planting. And then finally, after tree planting, we are visiting the site every 2 months to do sapling protection. You see, when you plant with the tree separated very widely now, it's a bit artificial. These are seedlings that grow under canopy.
Yeah.
So until a canopy is established, grass is amazing. It's just so rapid its growth. So we go back in 2 months, we push back the grass and then make sure the root base has a leaf litter so it's moist and comfortable and the plants will be fine after about 2 years. And there are plenty of people who want to do this. So now that we've done our trials, we can start inviting the public. And I'm excited to meet them.
Fantastic.
There was a guy who came at the last session and he worked so hard. He managed to do maintenance around 8 trees. And he says, oh, actually, I'm a gardener. And I was like, bring your friends next time. And see you right on.
We're talking with N. Siva Sotti, the senior lecturer at the Department of Biological Sciences at NUS and also a coordinator for the International Coastal Cleanup. And Siva, we can't end this conversation without talking to you about the otters. Otterman is your nickname, after all. And we had you on a number of months ago when there was this controversy about the otters, you know, breaking into gardens and eating koi fish and et cetera, et cetera. Where are we now with our otter population? How big is it? How many families do we have? And where's the dialogue with keeping the otters safe and keeping, separated from human contact?
Well, the otter population will stabilize itself due to limits of space to live, limits on food. There's one population that has bucked the trend, and this is the Zook family that got kicked out of Singapore River couldn't establish himself in Kallang River, and now he's wandering the urban matrix. And you know, they can climb fences, and you know, they have crossroads. People saw a video outside Istana.
Yeah.
They haven't really died yet, so we are kind of amazed. This may be the most urban adapted otter population in the world. So I've set the students to start studying them in detail to figure out what's going on. The otter working group includes MParks and Acres, and when people have difficulties, we go down and give them advice on simple ways they can mitigate the problem. Some problems are more difficult, so we need a long-term solution. But otter populations generally are stable. If you go out to look for them, it can be quite difficult. Don't be fooled by all the long lenses that are being used by experienced otter watchers to bring you them frolicking in front of your face every day. I've sent other people, I say, go Gardens by the Bay and look. And then, you know, 2 days later, they're like, I can't find the otters. There's a visiting lecturer who I discovered to my horror had brought his class for 3 years and not seen them. I was like, please ask us first. Our guys follow them every day.
Exactly. Yeah. I see them every day.
Yeah, so this is symptomatic of a city in nature. So the government has had four visions of planting, right? We're the fourth vision now, city in nature. And this means bringing nature close to urban deficit people, and they're going to struggle with it. They're going to be horrified by ugly caterpillars, birds that turn up at your window, macaques that explore the urban areas before they find another forest patch. And I think this is going to be a big thing for us in the next decade or so, how we adapt to creatures in our midst, but also how we enjoy creatures in our midst. So things are turning up right at our doorstep. I can do a nature trail at anyone's doorstep now. So there's a lot to be excited about, but we will have to learn how to manage it.
Yeah, just one thing I have to ask you while you're here. We're talking about the positives, but I know you're aware, like all of the Nature Society, of the shocking news this week in Kranji. Just so depressing, where an agency as part of the JTC Corporation at Kranji inadvertently, erroneously cleared huge parcels of land either side of the rail corridor and what we all know is a beautiful part of the country in terms of biodiversity out there at Kranji, not far from the Sungai Below Reserve. Now there's an investigation, it's ongoing, so you know we have to let that run its course. But what are your thoughts on that, and how can we avoid that in the future? Clearly, some miscommunication must have taken place there because it should not have happened.
So we don't have an EIA law, but we have a process. And in the process, if you're handed over a plot of land, then you employ someone to do an environmental baseline study. And based on that study, you come up with a design plan that tries to mitigate impact, keep maybe the best parts, and you also come up with a plan for how to monitor the development. So these are two very important studies. And then you engage nature groups. Now, some developers are better. They engage us before. So then we give input on the survey design. But okay, say you engage us after, then we scrutinize the plan and we go through, you know, in great step. How can you create refugia? How can you not cut down so much forest? Is it possible to integrate it within your design? And we give them ideas. Then do you have connectivity with neighboring areas? Now, there's a lot of engagement going on, and a lot of it has been quite productive. We can't completely stop. But the difference between a development 20 years ago would be a complete clearance. And the development today might take into account refugia connectivity and how to have a more green space subsequently to attract wildlife back into spaces that you can provide. And of course, environmental stewardship is increasing. So some of the people we talk to really embrace the plans and they go the extra mile. What has happened here is before any engagement, before even the report was completed, a contractor was seen to have cleared the area. So this is an abject failure of the process. And, you know, I feel it's like it's a criminal act. So MParks is investigating, and you know, government is going to be very upset about all this because the approach they have has been quite sincere. In fact, when government wants to start engaging, my nights are all gone. You know, it's my parties is sitting in boardrooms and going through 100 slides, trying to scrutinize everything. So we've gotten used to it and we've had productive relationships. I mean, if you think about what the purpose of the park that was going to build there is, we are trying to project agricultural. What is agriculture in Singapore? Climate change means we may lose our food security sources. Correct. So what are we going to do? Sit around? So they are projecting what to do. And then what's interesting about the space, it's the Sungai Kadut Eco District, right? Mm. They say, look, we can't just build manufacturing and then at night nobody comes. It's a waste of space. So what they do is they are mixing business, manufacturing, residence, and community space so that there's multiple use of the site. And it's not going to be dead even at night. So that's a response of space shortage. The other response that you might not see within it is advanced techniques like, let's prepare the material, assemble it on site. So that means the amount of impact they create in a site doesn't have to be so great. And with that footprint reduced, maybe in the final design, you can incorporate some of that original forest. The people who occupy the space will love it if they have a green connectivity with the rail corridor, which is not interrupted. So it's a win-win for all. So this is what the nature groups are working very hard at behind the scenes in private meetings in order to enhance developments that turn up. But this was hijacked, so we really need to know why.
Yeah, it's really hard to it's hard to imagine in Singapore where everything is so planned and so calculated that somebody could come in and clear cut these two areas. It defies logic, but obviously the investigation will bring that to light. LL10,
I must say, when you put up a hoarding, plenty of things can happen behind.
Yeah.
So here, you know, we got to give credit to Bryce Lee, who trapped in Singapore, you can't trek through the region's forest. He starts using his drones and, hey, what's going on here?
Oh, so that's how it was discovered. That's how it was discovered.
Yeah, he says, like, what's going on? So, and then subsequently people dug up satellite imagery and said, hey, this went on a long time before. So COVID is forcing scrutiny back to our spaces, also appreciation. And if they want to be, you know, people want to be involved in these decisions, then I think it's really excellent. I mean, it's a scar in our heart when we lose even a 50-year-old forest. You know, it's that loss is terrible, even if it's a 10-year-old forest. But then how are we going to improve things for the future? And I think this will be a very important event, you know, ranked in terms of awakening and dialogue. You know, there are groups that are writing to the MPs right now. I never would have believed that this was happening so quickly. And COVID's partly responsible.
Yeah. Let's hope that contractor puts their money back into this project and restores whatever they can. You know, LL Tan, one of our regular Facebook Live listeners, expressed a point of view that I think many people think about in Singapore, and that is LL Tan says, NParks should tone down its over-enthusiastic planning and development in greening Singapore. Let the greening be nature-driven rather than man-made. And that kind of goes somewhat against what you've just talked about this process where NGOs and government talk together and try to come to an agreement on how to use some of the space.
I must say a patch of green won't turn into a forest because the seed bank is long lost. And you can blame colonial cultivation, new immigrants that came in, planting nutmeg and rubber and whatnot. So in a forest, when a patch appears, there is seed rain from the surrounding trees. The soil will have a seed bank. And when pioneers come in and grow up really fast, the things that we complain about now, right, they create a shade. And then the slower growing trees will start to eventually grow. And over, you know, centuries, they create a canopy. The pioneers die out. So that's normal succession. It's not going to happen in Singapore. Mm-hmm. So when they carved out Chestnut Nature Park and said, okay, good, we create a buffer park. And we look at the park, it's like, holy cow, that's going to take, you know, 100 years or more to recover to the point of the adjacent nature reserve. So then we roll out our sleeves and get to work and get the adjacent communities to participate so that they realize we all got to be in this together to recover the kind of forest that we want future generations to be able to enjoy.
And just briefly from me, Siva, that is a magnificent painting of hornbills you have behind you. Is that an actual painting? Was it done locally?
Yeah, it was done by an Acres volunteer and it was sold at the auction for the annual dinner. So Acres is a wildlife charity. They do rescue of animals. They do phenomenal work. And so we go to the annual dinner. It didn't happen last year because of COVID, and we volunteers auction off paintings, which is lovely. You see a couple of other paintings. There's
I've seen
one by a secondary school kid.
Yeah, I was going to say, anyone watching on Facebook Live, he's got some wonderful paintings behind him. And I want to say...
This one is...
Yeah, go on.
Piquet's.
Oh, my... This is my illustrating colleague.
Collaborator. Yeah.
I was going to say, I've been to Acre's annual charity dinners before. And Siva... When he starts bidding at the auctions, he's like Warren Buffett. You can't get near him. I mean, he's like Rockefeller. Once he starts going, he buys everything at the auctions.
Well, I have to say,
it makes me regret my career choice. I should have earned like 20 times more to be fully functional. But someone's got to study their plants and animals.
You know, I have to say, seeing that hornbill picture, last week we had 10 hornbills in a tree outside of our apartment.
10?
10.
Always in pairs.
And they when they took off, it was like the Air Force was leaving us. But it was beautiful to see. And that's right in Central. That's right by Newton Circus.
And honestly, that's down. Yeah. Let's be honest now. That's down to people like Siva. Yeah. I mean, the hornbills were pretty much almost extinct, I believe, Siva, by the 90s.
I can't claim all the credit. So we used to cycle to Pulau Ubin and hope to see them flying over from Malaysia. But after Singapore got more green and more connected, the hornbills came to Ubin, started using the durian trees. Some provisioning was made for structures. They did well. Then they got out of Ubin. Some started turning up in Changi. And then they were spotted in East Coast and they came to the South. And from the West, there was a release in Sungai Buloh. They came through Tuas. NTU students spotted it in campus and they come to Botanic Gardens. Awesome. So there was a release at Istana and Sungai Buloh only, but the rest of it was the birds doing well in the Singapore landscape. Even though it's a much simpler landscape, and then because of connectivity, finding their way around. So when we say let planting happen by itself, I think if we do better with our planting, so we are strategically planting a kind of combination of trees that provide forest structure and food for wildlife, based on, you know, all these studies that go on, I think that's a much better strategy to adopt. So I'm looking forward to doing more at Rail Corridor South, Chestnut Nature Park. Oh, if I could quit my job and plant trees every day, I'd do it in a beat. I've seen so much of loss. The planting trees is so therapeutic.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's a great thing.
Well, N. Sivasoti, thank you so much, as always, for coming on. Lecturer, Department of Biological Sciences, also known as Otterman. We know you've got a conference you've got to get on to, but thanks for spending time with us today and for all the hard work that you and so many volunteers are doing across Singapore to keep us green and make us even more green. We really appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, guys. Thanks, Glenn. Thanks, Neil.
No problem.
Talk to you soon. Yep, thank you.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg. Or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.